Hey, everybody. Welcome to Tone Talk with Mark Uzansky and Dave Friedman. How are you? It's a special Saturday edition, number 93, which is our special guest today is Dan Steinhardt of The Gig Rig. Thanks so much for coming on, Dan. How are you?
You're so welcome. That intro is banging.
Oh, thanks. It was a little fast. It sounded
it's
like
great. They're really good.
I don't even think I recorded it that fast, though. It was
did it go faster today? I don't know.
It just seemed to really like just pick up speed and went.
It's
like,
too early. We're not used to it.
So in the chat, guys, let us know how our microphones are. Would love to know if we're all even or if we're like all over the place. Because
checking one, two.
What's that, Dave?
Well, we should just all talk and then everyone can decide if we're all even or not.
Yeah.
Hard man. To tell.
Oh, you got BV on here as well.
Oh, yeah. BV's on here.
Oh, yeah, what a legend.
He helps us. BV's great.
Yeah, yeah. He also helps us for our TPS live thing on Mondays as well. Absolute legend. Great to see you, mate. Thank you for coming on and weaving your magic.
Yeah. Lovely. BV's been fantastic help. People say the audio is good. Hi, all. Audio is fine. Sounds fantastic. Okay, good.
Awesome.
David's very slightly hotter, but good. Okay, well, sounds like
wonderful.
My mark is slightly lower. All right, let's see if I can change that.
He can change it by moving his mic closer into the.
That's true. But then it would be like in my mouth. I don't want it in my mouth. I hope everybody's doing good. Dave, have you been? You're in the shop today, right?
I'm in the shop today. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I work on Saturdays here, generally.
What are you working on at the moment, Dave?
I don't know.
Good question.
I just finished a rig for someone. He picked it up before the show here.
Right.
Just a rig that he plays at home, but it's a big wet, dry, wet rack thing almost. Yes. With pedals and stuff, you know.
Yeah, man.
Then I have some rigs in the other rooms for the band The Killers.
Oh, lovely.
That have been the COVID rigs, basically. They've been
right
here since the start of COVID. Mm-hmm. And they're actually going to take them out of my space next week, which is fantastic because they're huge. But they're mostly a fractal-based rig now.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it used to be all pedals and amps and junk, and then now it's the fractal thing. Sadly.
Sadly. Yeah. Dan and I were having this conversation yesterday, as a matter of fact, about the real thing versus, using these load boxes and IRs or cab, you know, the aux and stuff versus your new ISO cab, NISO box you got.
Yeah, I think the technology is amazing for that stuff. And we use the aux box and the Boss one. They're great.
Awesome.
But I got an ISO box from a German maker called Grossmann. And he's done a really great job of getting rid of the resonant frequencies and stuff in there. And basically I punched a hole through the wall. So I've got a tiny little studio at home. I punched a hole through the wall just to feed this speaker cable and mic cable through. And I don't know with the, with all the load box and stuff, they're brilliant, but I don't know if it was just me suffering from option paralysis. But I was trying to get a guitar sound with a few things to do some demos from home, and hours and hours and hours just going around just trying to find something that connected with me. I plugged this, I just got an old AKG mic on a greenback in the load box, matchless, 15 watt mode, turned it up. There it is. It was just there, connected. And I just could then crack on and get some work done. So for me, I'm sure if I spent some time with that stuff and it would get, easier, but it just, I talk about this quite a lot on the show, that if I was a player like Mick, I could sound good with anything. Mick's got that amazing touch and feel and stuff, and he just sounds amazing. Whatever he picks up, you know, he's that sort of player. But I'm really not that guy. I have to feel connected before anything musical will come out, you know. Otherwise, it's just I'm just regurgitating stuff that I know. And
you're not inspired.
Yeah, totally. Sorry. But as soon as I feel connected, then stuff can start to happen. So that was, you know, I love my ISO cab. It's great. Just a bit of either Capital Chambers reverb, you know, a plug-in, or a bit of the Ocean Way Studios, just to give it a bit of space. Mm-hmm. It's choice. Really, really great.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't too into IRs, but when I got the Aux, I was quite happy with it.
Yeah, the Aux is amazing. It really is amazing. Like, if you've got, if you don't have decent mics and you don't have a decent room to mic things up in, it can be really challenging to, you know, to get those sounds. And that those solutions are fantastic. You know, the Aux, the Boss, Captor X, all those things, they're all great. But still, you know, there's something about the sticking a mic on a cab.
Yeah, you had me thinking.
Everything else is trying to emulate those things, which is great. The technology is really good. It's getting better and better. But if you have, you know, if that's what you're trying to emulate and you can just do that thing, you know, physically, you know, you're there.
Right. Yeah. And I have no excuse. I can definitely mic up a cab when no one's around or something like that. So I should be able to do it.
But if you're recording at night, or, you know, you've got those constrictions, they're fantastic.
Right.
You know, we had, I remember doing a rig for Stephen Wilson, and where I think the camper had not long come out, and we sort of took his Bad Cats down to a studio and were, you know, miking them up and stuff. And, you know, in that environment, they were fine. You know, they were great. You wouldn't necessarily track albums with that stuff, but if there was you just wanted a part, you know, and you didn't have time to run down to whatever studio is, you could pop those in, job done. You know, right. So definitely amazing technology.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
We have a question from Modern Vintage. Let me get it. Dave, what is the best, safest pedal or product to switch between my BE and JJ amp cab stacks, and if possible, run both together? Radial Big Shot ABY.
That will work fine. There's a smaller one you can use, the Radial Bones something. It's blue. It runs on 9 volts, so you don't have to have the huge pedal with the booster and stuff. That works well. It's transformer isolated, has phase reversal, so it's good.
That's cool. There was another question early on that I thought was interesting, and I think it was a myth.
You have to have your mouth towards the mic.
Me?
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you go away.
Oh, okay. All right. Does touching the tubes with bare fingers really cause a hot spot on the tubes?
No.
Yeah, that was my understanding as well. So anyway,
it does leave oily. It can leave oily residue though. And it's unsightly.
But it's not going to ruin anything.
No.
No.
See a big print right on it. It's like, okay.
Yeah, what do you think we do?
Yeah. I just remember, you know, when I got my, you know, my old, I got a 61 AC30, and I found an original set of mullards. Cost a fortune. But I remember having you know, one of those cloths, and making sure that everything, you know, didn't have any finger marks on them. I want, you know, when I took the picture of them, I didn't want to have any evidence of my hand on the valves. That's all. But yeah, of course, it's glass.
That's cool. I just wanted to, I thought it was a good question for those who might not know. Ben Breard, Dan, what happened with the auto pot? It looked like a fantastic idea and execution.
Thanks, Ben. Right. So for those that don't know, the auto pot was basically I had a little DC motor and I had a bunch of gears and things that you could hook up to a pedal, you know, take the knob off, hook it up to the pedal, and that would go back to a little MIDI box. And you could program the knob rotation of the pedal. And it was a lot of fun. But then the problem I found was to actually get it connected to the pedal, every pedal is different. And we had to have so many different options to make sure that the gears and everything worked well. And we'd had a couple of people try it out. Just the amount of customer support it would have taken just made it completely untenable. It was a really fun thing. It was in the early days of me thinking about what comes after G2. And I was thinking about, wouldn't it be great if the next unit could actually control the knob? So that was part of that experiment. Right. And I've still got the prototypes around. They're still really fun, but the way to connect them to the pedals is a bit fiddly. And there are other things now out there that are having a go at that stuff. When it came down to it, actually supporting people through, getting it right and getting it connected to the pedal was going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But it was fun. I love that. I love doing that stuff. Loads of fun. Like, prototyping is my favorite thing to do.
You've been doing that for a long time. How did you get into it?
The guitar stuff?
No, yeah, building stuff. I mean, that's completely different than playing guitar.
Yeah. I was always a guitar player, since I was really young. And like I was saying before, it was difficult for me to, I was surrounded by the rock scene in Australia when I was growing up was massive. And some really great guitar players. And I loved it. I had this real passion for it. I certainly wasn't the most talented musician out there, but there was something, it was sonically this thing about the guitar that really connected with me. It was my world. But I worked out pretty early on that, I'd always struggled with my sound, and I had all of the state-of-the-art equipment, and I remember thinking, if it's state-of-the-art, surely it has to sound the best. It's the newest, shiniest, most expensive thing. Surely it's got to sound everything better than everything that came before. And I was in a session and the producer that we had, I had my rack of stuff, midied up to the eyeballs and this producer brought in these, crates of old pedals and stuff. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? You're living in the past. This is where it's at. Anyway, he said, I'll try this. And he took out an electric mistress and he plugged it in and I just hit one chord and it was so arresting. And this thing was, 78. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of, everything that I believed in a moment was questioned. It's like, I can't get a sound anything near this with all of this amazing new stuff that I've got. And then took out a CE1 and then that was it. I was done. So from that moment, it's like, okay. So I started, finding these old pedals and went down to guitar. Was it Guitar Crazy in Coogee and got an old Tube Screamer, CE1, Electric Mistress and a Phase 90. And I took them all back home and it was like, they all sound amazing. The problem I was having was because I was so used to the MIDI stuff where I could program a sound and go from one sound to the other, you know, with all the delays changing and gains changing and stuff. Because the gigs I was doing at the time, I was doing a lot of touring. I was with an artist called Max Sharam in Australia, and she was incredible. She's, you know, there's a Kate Bush vibe about her and really amazing songs, but they were quite complex. And I had to jump between a lot of different sounds and acoustic guitar back to different electric stuff. And I couldn't do it with the pedals. There was just no way. The other thing was that, you know, I plugged the Mistress in, it was great. But if I plugged the CE1 and the Phase 90 in with it, it was like, where's that amazing Mistress tone gone? You know?
Right.
So anyway, I was with this producer and, you know, I was like trying to find a solution for this. Now, a friend of mine was a really great guitar tech, and he was working with a guitar player in Australia called Mark Bazot, who a lot of people will know as Johnny Diesel. And he just got a Pete Cornish rig built, and he'd asked me to come over and help him map some MIDI stuff. So I was in this rehearsal studio, and he had all these Soldano amps and this amazing Pete Cornish pedal board and the racks of stuff. And, you know, at the time, that cost as much as a house in Australia, that rig. And it was doing all the stuff. It was, you know, switching everything in and out beautifully. And it was like, there was just no way, you know, for me personally. And, you know, I was lamenting the fact that I couldn't, you know, where is this device that helps me deal with this stuff? And the producer said, just go and build it yourself. And I thought, okay, yep, fair enough. So I started studying and studying electronics and stuff. And I got to a point where I hit my talent level with electronics. And by that time, I'd moved to England. I was with my girlfriend who became my wife. And I started talking to engineers and ended up with an engineer called David Mapleston. And that's how we started the gig rig. So he was an engineer, also played a bit of guitar. I was a guitar player that had, you know, a bit of electronics knowledge. And we sort of had this crossover point. And that's how that all started. And he was with the business, for, I think, 15 years. So he left the business a year ago. And now, I'm sort of owner of Gig Rig. But that's how it all started.
That's great.
Well, now do you have a different engineer you work with on some stuff?
I've got a couple of engineers, in my team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, engineers are amazing.
Yeah, they're the ones that have to get it done.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to do.
Yeah, that's
you
great.
Do what?
That's, I think, part of my what I'm passionate about. I mean, I love solving problems. I always have, and you know, so I love coming up with ideas and just playing and then sitting down with our engineers and working out what's possible and what's not. But I think because I come from, you know, my background has always been as a player. Who had that epiphany moment about being connected, you know, and that sort of guided everything for me.
Right. And now you have new products.
We have lots of new products. Yeah,
a whole new series.
So G3 and the G3 Atom came out they're announced in October, started shipping in December. And that was there you go.
Look amazing.
Yeah. So that was, you know, G2 came out I think in 2014, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. They were, you know, a step up from our first product. And, you know, lots of people have used them and love them and, you know, really honored because of that product that we got to, I got to build rigs for some of my heroes. It's been wonderful. One thing that I really wanted to do with G3, I love parallel signal paths. And because we do a lot of the wet dry stuff on the show, because it's just so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to incorporate that in the routing of G3. But also, you know, when you're mixing stuff, you know, one thing that I hadn't really found, you know, you need to be able to phase correct things when you're mixing stuff in parallel. And, you know, so we built all that in to G3, but also like MIDI stuff, like really full on MIDI capabilities. Mm-hmm. You know, sending out to 15 different MIDI messages and CC and expression pedals and all that stuff. If you look at the pedals that have been coming out the last couple of years, you know, pedals from people like Strymon and Chase Bliss and Maris, and that have these unbelievable MIDI capabilities. And I love these pedals, you know, like the Automatone series from Chase Bliss are incredible. The CXM Reverb is the best pedal reverb I've ever heard. I think it's just astonishing. And I really wanted to make sure that we could capitalize on all of this incredible MIDI ingenuity. I mean, you think about this technology that's been around since like the 70s, and the stuff that people are able to do with it, and still coming up with ingenious ideas. You know, it's wonderful. I think MIDI 2.0 is coming out soon as well, which is scary. Well, I mean, not scary.
That'll change everything.
But it's amazing. I think, you know, if all this stuff is already the capability of the MIDI currently, it's going to be fascinating to see what's possible with the new version. But yeah, that's the whole, you know, with G3, I just wanted to make sure that with all of these amazing pedals that you could access all these functions through G3.
Sounds awesome. Sounds awesome.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Yeah. I've not messed with it.
Now you have
to get one. I have to get one out to you guys to have a play.
I would love to play.
Because you got a G2, didn't you, David?
I do have a G2, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have to get a G3 out to you, have a play.
Yeah, love to. Love to.
You see, awesome. Now you have an echo also. There's a little echo going on.
Yeah.
But then it goes away.
Seems like it.
So weird. Crazy. Well, if people are hearing an echo, let us know. I'm not sure I can fix it, but we'll figure it out.
But it went away. So why does it come and go?
That's the question. Yeah. BMO says Mark Echo. Yeah. Dave Echo. But now it's gone. So we won't focus on it. If it comes back,
we'll go with it right now.
Yeah, exactly. So where can people get the gig rig, Dan, the G3?
We made 500 in the first batch, and I, you know, it risked everything. There was so much money for us to do this, but it only made sense in those sorts of numbers as far as components and that sort of stuff is concerned. And I thought, well, that's going to see us through for 12 months, you know, surely. So we sold out of the first 500 in just over 2 days. So wow. We're doing everything we possibly can to get the next batch through. So I think we're looking at, my production manager is going to kill me if I don't get this right. I think we're looking at April for the next batch shipping. Stunned by, you know, how everyone sort of just gone, yep, that's what I've been after. And yeah.
Well, you know, since the pandemic, everyone's home and they're just thinking about stuff and what they want to do and make and, yeah. Or they have time to make it, or they, I don't know. It's been crazy for music gear.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to a friend of mine yesterday that runs a store in Detroit, and he's like, oh my God, it's been crazy.
Christmas every day.
It's just like we ran through everything almost, yeah. You know, like ran out of everything.
Yeah.
And like Sweetwater is telling me their issue is they can't get the gear fast enough from the manufacturers.
Yeah. To sell it. Yep. Totally. I don't know what it's like for you guys over there. We've since, we've had a massive thing in components over the past few years. Obviously the Roche laws came out however long ago, and you know, that was fine. Everyone sort of dealt with that. Mm-hmm. That just for everyone who doesn't know, Roche stands for removal of hazardous substances. So some, you know, things like cadmium and mercury and arsenic that used to be in things like, opto resistors and light dependent resistors and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That, you mm-hmm. know, they can't produce those anymore. So, you know, once they removed those and got the components that we were allowed to use, things, you know, became a little bit more difficult. However, in the past few years, we've found that, you know, just normal through-hole components have become more challenging to get, and just decent-sized surface mount components. Mm. We're seeing situations at the moment where if a component becomes like hard to get, there'll be car manufacturers that will go to the company and buy every single component they have just to mm-hmm. make sure they've got stock of this particular RRC or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's also making manufacturing challenging, you know, as well. We're finding that we've, you know, components that 6 years ago were on a 4 week to 6 week lead time and now on a 40 week lead time.
Yeah. Yeah. We see that too. The same, right. same thing. Like even our like lead time for the pots we use in amps, has unbelievable lead time now.
Crazy, right?
And it's like you're scrambling to buy up whatever there is left.
Yeah.
And then you're scrambling to find an alternative while you're waiting for the, you know, the long lead time on the components, you know, and frankly, there's just not as many choices as there once were either.
Yeah.
That's very, you know, true. It's like, I mean, for the pots we use, I mean, there's hardly any companies that make pots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I mean, you have CTS, you have Bourne's, and you have, you know, Alpha.
Yeah.
And for the most, I mean, there's a few other specialty pots, Alps and things, but for the most part, those are the three that, you know,
sure.
all of them come from.
And that's like, you know, there's only two factories now making valves. Is that right?
Well, I mean, there's more than one factory in Russia. So there's two factories in Russia that are making valves. And then there's the Slovakian factory in, you know, Slovakia that do JJ.
Okay, right.
And the Chinese factory is closed right now. So there is no Chinese tubes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Which
put another hurt on a lot of people for things.
Yeah.
So then you had to scramble to find alternatives. If you were using any of them.
Yeah. So. Tricky. And
do you think this is causing prices to go up as well? Because it seems like since the last year in the pandemic, gear prices have shot up.
Well, and I mean, maybe.
I'm not saying Friedman gear, but I'm just saying in general, it seems like everything has shot up in price.
Well, I mean, okay, there's a lot to that. In the U.S., I mean, there was unbelievable tariffs on everything that came from China.
Yeah.
And we're in the electronics industry. Everything, for the most part, comes from China.
Yeah.
Except for a few items. So, I mean, crazy tariffs, you know, like, you know, say a sub-assembly of something like amps we use for our monitors, are like, you know, for our full-range monitors, we get a full amp assembly, right?
Right.
And when that amp assembly comes in, I mean, it's like $60 or $70 more than it used to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, everything's like that, but everything has more, like, you know, pots that you use are more because that, you know, the prices shot up on that stuff because, well, there's all these tariffs that we have, you know, to deal with. Yeah. Maybe those tariffs will change soon.
It's tricky, man. Pricing is a really interesting thing. I hate putting prices up. I have arguments with, you know, my financial person all the time. But it's, you know, it does get to a point where, you know, because like Brexit now has really hit us in Europe.
Oh, God, I can only imagine.
I've heard.
Shipping a small box now to Germany is costing us like £65, you know, to get through
through customs.
No, well, all that stuff as well. And when you, because of all the red tape and everything that goes with it, we got to pay extra charges to our fulfillment house. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's unreal.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But also, because you combine that with the pandemic, and like we would normally ship everything DPD to Germany. That's great. But people are getting groceries delivered now with DPD. You know, it's
right.
It's that whole side of things is so full on. It's so at capacity. You know, because I mean, I don't know what the situation is between LA and Florida, but like where we are, we're locked down, and so everything has to be delivered. And I probably get, you know, 2 or 3 Amazon deliveries every day.
Yeah.
You know, and then the shopping and everything on top of that. All the people out there, the heroes out there doing these deliveries. You know, it's, you know, all those guys are working their butts off, and there's only so much capacity with that.
Yeah. No,
There's nothing locked down here.
Oh, really?
No.
Man.
I mean, there's limits on things, meaning in California, I mean, there hasn't been a lockdown in California since the beginning of the pandemic.
Right. Okay.
Now, California has been relatively locked down, meaning there is no indoor dining.
Yeah. Okay.
You can only, and for a minute there wasn't outdoor dining either. They took that away recently, but they brought it back.
Okay.
So you
can still do al fresco. You can meet people outside.
Yeah, technically it's supposed to be from your own
bubble
household or your own bubble. Yeah. I don't know if any of that really. No one checks that. You couldn't get your hair cut for a long time.
Right.
And stuff, but that's open again. That's open again. So, I mean, I don't know.
See, in Florida, it's like
Florida's wide open.
Yeah. Pandemic. What pandemic? What pandemic? It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
A lot of states are wide open. I mean, it just depends on where you are. I mean, it got really bad here for a minute over the holidays, you know, where we were seeing like 22,000 cases in LA County a day.
Yeah.
But now it's back down to like 2,500 cases.
Right. Okay.
Ish. Yeah. 3,000.
It's getting better.
Which is, you know, crazy better.
Yeah.
Almost like doesn't seem like that's possible, but like, sometimes I wonder, was there really 22,000 cases? This just seems like such a huge figure in a few weeks to change.
Yeah, man. Totally.
You know, but yeah. You know, I don't know. I just look at the figures. But then again, you think LA County also has like 10 million people in it. So, you know, that's a huge, we have a huge population in the state of California.
So all of these things are impacting business, you know, and And unfortunately, it does have an impact on prices. But for anyone watching, don't think that manufacturers don't agonize over this stuff, because it's a really big deal. Putting prices up is a really big deal, and it's certainly never done flippantly.
Right. There's a question here from Septic. Does Gig Rig 3 use relays or analog switches for switching?
All solid state switching. Yeah. No relays. No relays in the. We got relays for the remote switches to keep the remote switches isolated. But everything else is solid state switching. But all analog, all really. Buffers are on the switchable buffers on the input and on the outputs, but all really high impedance straight through.
Yeah, it uses the same kind of. Doesn't it use the same sort of switching matrix kind of chip that like the Boss does and things like that?
Yeah. Well, they use the same.
Switching. The RJM is doing that now too.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
really can reorder things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reorder thing and change the signal path and everything.
Yeah, relays, you won't be able to reorder, people.
That's exactly.
Relay is a relay.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Relays are great, but they have limitations.
By the way, I want to mention our sponsors. You guys, check out Sweetwater in the link that we provide. Sweetwater is a sponsor of the show, and if you purchase something from Sweetwater, they give us a little kickback, a little commission. Which helps out the show. So please check out the link and check out Sweetwater. And also, I want to give a shout out to Neil Giraldo, who sent us his spirits, 3-chord spirits. Check it out, guys. If you if you're into whiskey or bourbon, great stuff, right, Dave?
Yeah. Fantastic. Mine are gone. The rye and the bourbon. I think which I might like the rye more than the bourbon, but that's my own personal thing.
So, okay. The rye. See, this is, I always get this confused. They're both whiskeys.
Yeah.
Right. But
Scotch is a whiskey too.
Right.
We call it Australian fighting wine.
Oh, that's funny. So Neil sent us these bottles, and I just wanted to mention his company. If anybody's into that stuff, check it out, because he's super cool. And they have some of the proceeds go to musicians in some
nice
so yeah. Give back program.
Yeah, he gives back from. He said that he gives back from day one when he first started the company, not after he made money at it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was the mission of the company, was to give back mm-hmm. from the start. So Neil's great, Pat Benatar great. So anyway,
this is interesting. Carlos Mendes has said, "Hey Dan, what's your favorite Marshall?" I had a 50-watt JMP from 76, I believe, like the last of the non-master volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And far out, man, that had the best clean sound. It was divine, an amazing pedal amplifier. I gigged with that for years. So the old JMPs I absolutely love. And it was all, it was PCB, it was nothing vintagey hand wired about it. It's just an absolutely cracking sounding amplifier that awesome. Just didn't have a, just kept getting louder and louder and louder. Yeah, really great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the last of the really good Marshalls, right? Dave, would you agree, the JMPs?
JMP is a pretty broad statement. That JMP lasts from 69 through,
before they launched the...
I mean, technically through 70... till almost 1980. So, and JMP, what is that? Is that a master volume JMP or a four input JMP? So, there's different just different things. I mean, personally, I like anything that has no circuit board, pre-circuit board. So 72-ish, half of 73.
Right.
Because the first circuit boards are a little rough.
Right.
And I know this from working on them. They fall apart in your hands, basically. If you have to resolder anything on the circuit board or do anything, the traces start just popping up, and they're just kind of awful. They got a little bit better late '70s when it went to like kind of the square switched Marshalls. Those boards got a lot better. That's kind of more like the beginning of the the master volume JMP version. They did make four input ones also. And then that turned the Master Volume one turned into a JCM 800, which is the same thing as the JMP. It just the JMP had maybe slightly better transformers.
What was your favorite amp to work on?
Old Marshalls.
Old Marshalls.
Yeah, like 73 and before. I mean, I don't mind working on later ones, and I do often, I mean, just a turret board construction is very easy to change things on. You know, it's a lot easier.
And sonically as well?
Sonically, I think they're better. Yeah, yeah. I think they're a little... Well, I mean, it's better, but it's... Well, it depends. You know, different years can be fine. Just depends on the parts that were used in these different years and models and... And if the transformers were as good as the older ones, I mean, I'm an old Marshall fan. That's home base for me.
Right.
Awesome.
Worked on so many over the years.
Well, that's your specialty, right?
Yeah. I worked on a lot of old Fenders too, though. A lot of old amps, period. And I've been in all sorts of stuff.
Right. Abrakis 1, thanks for the super chat. How important would a power conditioner voltage regulator be in having a lower noise floor and less hum interference? And this is for a home studio.
Well, hum interference and a lower noise floor, generally speaking, none at all. I think some RF interference. If you have some noisy power, maybe if you have a refrigerator turning on and off, it'll probably save the little click that you hear.
Yeah. You have dimmer switches and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you have dimmers in your house, you're screwed no matter what you plug into. It doesn't make any difference. If you turn them down at all, anywhere in the entire house.
Yep.
Your guitar is going to buzz like a mother, especially if it's a passive guitar, you know?
Yeah. Also considering that, you know, what people are plugging into these, those power conditioned supplies now with a modern home studio and, you know, all the digital supplies and everything, and all, you know, depending on what you've got plugged into that, I've got just a little Apollo Twin thing set up here, and you know, some nice monitors. As soon as the laptop turns on, you can hear the mouse tracking across the pad. It all depends on the stuff that's being plugged into it, because that has all sort of
there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, like for instance, and someone that builds rigs will understand this. How many products and pedals ship with a wall wart that is noisy?
Oh, man.
Severely noisy, like completely screwed.
Yep.
Like, I don't understand how they can ship it. I always think that it's that the pedal is only ever going into a clean source when they're testing it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, into a clean amp, you might not hear it.
Yeah.
Take that same pedal and put it into a Marshall or something that has some dirt to it.
Of course.
Just, you're going to go, wow, why is it hum? All I have is this one pedal and a one spot plugged in.
Yep. Yeah. You know?
I think, and let me preface that. That's the only the one spot they make some good products, but the wall wart actually is not.
Yeah.
The power supplies are good.
Yeah. The true tone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There, that's great.
But if you have a one spot wall wart, you can just throw that away.
Yeah.
it buzzes. No,
it's.
I have one.
Buzzes.
It's funny because it's funny you say this because I was just using that into a pedal into my Sir Ombre down here, mm-hmm. and it was buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't figure out what the fuck was going on.
Well, that's it.
That's a lot of you've also got.
I love the rest of their products though.
Mm. Yeah, I think with some of the electroharmonics stuff that it draws a high current,
mm-hmm.
and they'll include a really cheap power supply just so that you can get it started.
Mm-hmm.
But those things cost pennies. But it's a lot of those pedals. You need a power supply that's got some muscle behind it to be able to get those things working. So mm-hmm. a lot of times they'll just ship it with something to get you started. Mm-hmm. And if you are, it might be fine if you are just plugging into your computer or whatever, or
The vast majority of switching power supplies, which basically everything is these days, mm-hmm. are horrible. Unless they're designed to do it right. Like, for instance, a Boss PSA 9-volt adapter works flawlessly.
Yeah,
it's a switching supply, but they actually had to have it made. I talked to them about that. Mm-hmm. Have it made a certain way in order to get it quiet. And it just works.
Yeah. How well do you know the guys at Boss, Dave?
Oh, I know the president really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
It was really funny. We were out there a couple of years ago, and Yoshi had invited Mick and myself out to come and have a look at their the tube amp expander.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know this at the time. They said, come out and hang out. And so we were with them for a week, and I was so blown away. Those guys are as passionate about gear as anyone I have ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this thing about, because Boss, they make so many things and they churn out this amazing amount of products. But man alive, they are so into it. Mm-hmm. Hanging out with all the engineers and stuff, and the guy that did the Katana amplifiers, and I sat down and talked with Yoshi for about an hour at a restaurant about capacitors. So Yoshi is fascinating. He used to be on the line making Space Echoes,
mm-hmm.
right? The old RE201s. And what he would do is he was on the line making these things, and then at night after his day job, he would study electronics or whatever. He basically had a path to get him, not necessarily to get him where he was, but he was so interested in all these things. He'd work all day putting these things together, and then he'd go and study electronics. And once he'd said, okay, now you can come over to the design team, and then he did that, and then at night he'd go and study something else, and mm-hmm. basically built his way up from putting together 201s to now being the president of the company.
Yeah.
And his story isn't unique. It's fascinating. I just came out of that place with this whole different, mindset of what Boss is as a company. We all know they're innovators and stuff, but man alive, the passion those guys have for the gear and what they do is incredible.
Well, yeah, and him running the company, they've since then have really kept putting out year after year super cool products, cool. For me, they came out with the DD500, and the DD500 was amazing because it had the vintage digital setting, which replicated the old SDE3000 delays.
Right.
And plus it did a whole slew of other things, obviously. Mm. And what I always like about that delay is it's easy to use. For me, many companies get lost. You have to look page through a million pages of manual, and you're reading it, and you, and this is me reading it, and you're still like, wait, what? You know, and then you go, okay, well, I got it. I had this funny thing. I did a rig, and there was a we had a rig. We had a DD500 and a Source Audio Tremolo on it.
Right.
And the Source Audio Tremolo, we wanted to tap tempo both.
Okay.
And we wanted to do it in a analog fashion, meaning just a tap tempo box plugged into these boxes, because that's how we were going to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I made a custom pedal, you know, tap. It's a dual kind of tap pedal, isolated, and just, you know, the boss took 5 seconds to set up to do it. Literally 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Without looking at a manual. All
right.
Just going in the page. Now, the Source Audio. What you realize is, in order to turn the external tap on, which it can do, you have to go in to use an editor.
In the app.
Yeah, you have to use the editor in the app. So you, for one, have to locate the small little, you know, USB cable to a regular USB cable. Got to locate that. Got to put the software on your computer. You got to plug it in to do this. This is just a tremolo box. I just want to tap tempo it, right? You have to do all that. And then you realize you actually have to put, it's not just a simple momentary switch latch. You actually have to put in some diodes and resistors and capacitors in order to make it work properly.
Right.
And by then I wanted to throw it across the room. We did do it.
Right.
But it took hours to finally get it all set up right.
Way too long.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't get this. Come on, really?
Yeah.
If you have an internal tap jack on a pedal, just make it so you plug the pedal in and it taps the tempo. Yeah, totally. Done.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think Source Audio, like their Collider pedal, I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. If you just want a single pedal with just some delay and reverb on it, it's wonderful. I think their filter pedal is exceptional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they've done some amazing thing. I think they've really, you know, on the technology front, they're really doing some wonderful stuff. I think there's always a, depending on the part of the design that you're focusing on, you know, it's really hard to get everything right, you know. Mm-hmm. But they are, you know, they're great and they're passionate and they're always pushing.
Yeah, sure.
I think the stuff with, you think about a company like Boss, who've been doing it for so long, mm-hmm. and they know the stuff that they have to get right as far as, you know, simple things like getting the tap right, making sure that, you know, delays between presets, all that sort of stuff. They know the stuff that it has to be nailed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're constantly pushing out in other areas. Like when we talk about the DD500, it's an amazing delay. I love that you can have a couple of engines running at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, just simple things like that. You know, these guys are having these ideas and saying, you know, let's work out a way to do this. And they've got the engineering know-how to make all this stuff happen and still yet make it accessible and relatively simple, you mm-hmm. know. That's right. Takes a lot of years to get to that point where you're just nailing everything, you know. But you know, I think there are companies like you know, Source Audio and Maris and, you know, Strymon, they all have their strengths.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, most of the Strymon stuff's simple to program, you know.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Fixed pedal boards.
If you've got a, you know, you can't MIDI map in the timeline. You know, so they've got, as far as the MIDI stuff is concerned, it's, you know, not the most amazing stuff to of course you can do stuff with a MIDI, but you can't, you know, there are things like that in mm-hmm. in the Strymon stuff that they haven't spent a lot of time on.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, so like, you know, they've all got the things that they're sort of great at. I love the sound of the Strymons. I think they're great. They're Riverside and they're, what was the other one? The other Overdrive pedal. I was really surprised with how great they sounded. You know, and I think Pete Chelly is a really switched on engineer, really knows his stuff. And you know, he's got good ears as well. You know, I think the they did a delay pedal a couple of years ago, which, oh man, my brain. It's basically got a Echo Rec style thing and a 201 thing in there. New format. And it sounds...
Oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but every company's got their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, yeah. Fixed pedal boards with the awesome super chat there.
Shazam. Thank you, Tim. Tim runs Fixed Pedal Boards is someone who makes some products that are really cool for pedal boards, little risers and different things. But mainly he runs Chapman, a Robert F. Chapman company, which is a metal company that essentially all the Friedman chassis come from. And Tim has a side business of Fixed Pedal Boards. He makes pedal boards and different pedal board accessories and different things. And Tim's a good friend. So thank you, Tim, very much.
Yeah, thank you. That's a funny
I think comment. You said in the super chat to someone I saw here that you said, I owe you more than I could possibly super chat. So, well, I'll keep doing that.
That's great.
So he makes you know, like chassis for pedals and things for different companies, and makes all sorts of metal doodads and gizmos for things.
The Strymon Volante. That's the one. Thank you. Volante.
Which one?
The Volante.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Just awesome. Really, really great.
I
really got into Echo Rex a while ago. Bought a baby Echo Rec and they got such a great sound. He's done such a great job with that pedal of just getting that unique, almost hi-fi quality that mm-hmm. those things have. Really, really cool.
Stay curious. I always get something out of these shows. Please keep doing them. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks. We don't plan on stopping.
No. Wait till you see our next show. That'll be fun.
Oh yeah.
What's coming up next?
We're going to be doing a show with Michael Nielsen and his friend Michael Torin, and it's all about 80s rack gear.
Oh man.
It's all, you know, Eventides and PCM 42s and SDE 3000s and, you know, anywhere from the crappy stuff that existed, cuz a lot of people don't really understand what's what. You know, some people now might think, oh yeah, that Quadreverb was good. No, it was never good. You know.
Yeah. Well, Mick and I were in at TC Electronic headquarters a few years ago, and we were actually talking to the designer of the the 2290.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, he's an amazing guy, right? And I said, I grabbed and said, look, just what is it about the 2290? Why does it sound just like supreme? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, it's mostly analog. He said, the digital part is the interface, but look inside, it's mostly analog delay. Mm-hmm. You know, just fascinating. But, you know, things like, I think we talked about this last time, the IntelliFX
had a
Chameleon. I think that was more 90s though, wasn't it? But that
IntelliFX, IntelliVerb, and RepliFX
ones
for Rocktron.
Yep.
That
SPX 90.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. That was a, you know, early thing. That was actually... I'm pretty sure the SPX90 was one of the very first MIDI processors.
Really?
If not possibly the first.
Wow.
On the market. I'm pretty sure it was the first.
Hmm. Yeah. Yamaha
was the leader in that when it first MIDI. When
they
it first
did came out. Some great stuff. I remember I was a big fan of, remember the Yamaha SG when Carlos Santana was playing those?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Those are great guitars.
Yamaha have done some really, really cool things.
Yeah.
It's such a massive company. They really nailed some stuff. But yeah, I remember those, hearing an SPX 90 for the first time, and it was like.
And now it's vintage.
Yeah, man. It still sounds great. So what's really interesting about those, a lot of those things, and you know, you look at the SD3000 and that sort of stuff, and the preamps that they designed to go with those, mm-hmm. and they are such a massive part of the sound of those units.
Yeah,
sure. And there's a character to them, and the way they work with the processing, and they, you know, I think it's. You know, for me, when I hear like the CXM, the pedal, the Chase Bliss and Maris collaboration, which is a take on the old Lexicon 224 mm-hmm. reverb, and when you hear that, it's got a similar vibe as to those really cool vibey 80s processors.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a really special thing.
Yeah, I mean that's what I always I call that sort of color, you know, the analog color of the audio circuits, not the processing, but the audio circuits that are around the processing.
Yeah.
Whereas what made that great? Because I mean, you know, back a PCM42, you know, it was like 8-bit converters and things, and just like it, you know, but it'll still run circles around anything made now. I mean, nothing made now that touches how it sounds.
Yeah.
Pretty much there's nothing anymore that touches how that stuff sounds. In pedals too, I find that there's some pedals that, you know, when you plug in to, here's this, my determining factor for the pedal. If I plug in and as soon as I play it, I go, ooh, you know, oh man. Then it's a good pedal. If you plug in and you go, okay, it's delaying, and you're not really excited about it, it's not.
Yeah.
So, and to me, that's color. That's like distortions, or, you know, like there's the analog. That's hard to explain what it is. There's an analog juiciness to the product or something, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. And a lot of stuff doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Totally. A lot of stuff's made that's perfectly good and sounds good, but it doesn't have that X factor.
Yeah.
You know, and some stuff does.
Yeah. But interesting. The last delay that I plugged into that I made gooey noises over was the Free the Tone Future Factory.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
So plugged that in with the CXM reverb, and it was like, we made the noises.
Yeah. I mean, Free the Tone delays in general were fantastic because they're very juicy sounding, like just gooey, and that's what the old stuff had, you know, that
totally that
gooey.
And again, so yeah, Yuki and it, another guy that just gets that side of things, and super passionate, and
I agree. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's what's amazing about this industry. There's a couple of things. A, there's space for everyone because everyone's got their own thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's almost like the ultimate swap meet because everyone is just so into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really great. It's really great.
It is.
I love it.
BV, thank you for your question. Given MIDI 2.0 is fast approaching and Tor, our friend, is now at UAD, can you see a firmware update over the fast USB of the UAD pedals to add MIDI 2.0?
I asked Tor this the other day. So we're going to be trying out the new UOD pedals. From what I've seen, I think they look great. I think they sound fantastic. But I was really surprised to see they didn't have any MIDI options. So
that's what a lot of people have said.
Yeah. But because of that USB connector, I'm hoping it'll be a firmware update, you know, and
yeah.
a MIDI into USB connector. I mean, you can do it. It mm-hmm. just depends on, you know, whether they go that way. I know when Tor was at TC, and I love him to bits. He's an amazing guy. I give him credit for really taking, you know, when they're doing the pedals things heavy at TC. It was really Tor's baby. Mm. And he really had a vision for that. But he was also the master of saying, like when they did the Ditto, right? And people were saying, oh, can I save loops? Okay, no. Oh, can I, that had a list of questions. And Tor would just go, nope, doesn't do any of that. Just does this, you know. And that was really, really cool. I think that there's too many possibilities sonically with the new UAD pedals for them not to include MIDI. You know, and so I'm at some point, they're going to have to do it, I think. Because their plugins sound unreal. I use them all the time. But actually, I was having a chat to Mark yesterday, about you can only get a handful on this, the Apollo Twin, because they're so hungry for power that, you know, you get a couple on there. And I'm like, I've just recorded guitars. I haven't even gone anywhere near vocals yet. And I completely run out of juice because I'm using a handful of UAD plugins.
You need the satellite.
Yes. Well, that's the next step. That's the next step.
Yeah.
Well, I've just bought a microphone, David. So yes. I might have to wait till next week to get the...
next week to do that, yes. But you can write it off.
Exactly. Yeah. But their stuff sounds fantastic, and we all know the lengths that UAD go to get this stuff right. I think the fact the pedals have sound great is a given, but yeah, I think the MIDI things definitely they're going to have to get that
mm-hmm.
and move on.
Cool. Neener Head DJ.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks for the super chat. What do you all think about the Marshall reissue JTM 45 offset that released in 2000? I have it and the 1 watt version. I love them. Also wondered your opinions, build quality and tone compared to the vintage offsets. Well, those 1 watts I heard are really cool.
Yeah. All the 1 watt amps were really super cool that they made. The offset was made quite well inside. I mean, like it was a turret board and use good quality parts and stuff. I think often when people do reissues of amplifiers like that, they get a lot of it right. Sometimes the transformers, they don't get quite right. And I find that weird. I think they could, it's not that hard. I mean, I know we have transformer companies here that can do it and mm-hmm. do it where you can't tell. I don't know, but that's Marshall. So I think with Marshall is that they're one step short of being great.
Sure.
Like just one step left out would have made it particularly perfect, you know?
Yeah. Right. Transformers is a really interesting thing. I guess, you know, when you look at circuit boards and components and stuff, and people can buy in certainly, you know, same or similar values to old amplifiers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But transformers, it's like I was very dear friend of mine, Jesse Hoff, who does Lazy J amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a bunch of old Transformers from old deluxes and old basements and stuff. And we spent a day just going through a bunch of different Transformers, and it is stunning the difference between, you know, a new sort of off the shelf thing and what people were producing, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a key part to the sound and the, you know, that the feel of the amplifier. If that iron's not right, it's a real it's a real key thing to miss. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, you know, I don't know, as far as Marshall is concerned, obviously they know how to build fantastic amplifiers. Mm-hmm. But I think companies who are willing to go to the lengths to really get the transformer right, you know, and not just one that works, but one that sounds with a particular amplifier, one that works great and sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an extra step that that all my favorite companies make.
Yeah, right. They put the time into that.
Yeah.
Lazy J is a great amp, by the way.
Man, killer.
He makes cool stuff.
He really does.
Jack, he should be on the show.
Dude, call Jesse.
Hook us up.
He's one of my – I totally will. So Jesse's one of my favorite people. He is – he's
make an email and introduction.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll do it. As soon as we finish, I'll introduce you to Jesse.
Oh, Dan, thank you.
He is wonderful. He's so knowledgeable. He's built me a bunch of amplifiers over the years. But yeah, I love him to bits. I really do. He's great. But I love his amps.
Yeah, they sound really good.
Really, really great.
I have a client that has several of them. And that he's in that tweed realm, but they sound really good, right? You know, they sound right. Yeah,
totally. Well, it's, you know, again, it's his passion. The Neil Young mm-hmm. tweed thing is his passion,
mm-hmm.
and he's got all those amps. He's coming on the show actually, and we're going to do a tweed amp special when we're allowed to mix with humans again. we had it all lined up before lockdown. But he's got some real insight into that stuff. And, you know, I've seen him, I've been with him while he's making amplifiers, and he'll take every component and clean the legs with white spirit and make sure that every connection is bang on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that, you know, when you find guys like that, who put so much care stuff into making it, you know, that's one side of things, but then the thing just sounds so great. I've got the amps I'm using of his now, I've got his J20, but he also built me a powered extension cab. So it's the power section of the J20 in a cab. Mm-hmm. And I've got a basically line out from that goes into the powered cab. And it's like just the single preamp. Man, yeah, it's awesome.
It's funny you say that. So we make a little Friedman combo, right, for the Dirty Shirley Mini and the Pink Taco Mini, and it's a 110 combo. So it's really small, you know. But I have one in my shop that I use often if I'm repairing a preamp or something, and I just go in the effects loop return.
Yep.
And use it as a power amp into this, you know, into its own speaker. And I keep like looking at it going, I need to make that. I just need to make the powered 110 speaker. And, but you know, my only other problem was, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's going to cost about as much as this amp anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, totally. Because, you know, well, it doesn't have the preamp section. Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's $30 in parts, right? So
the Kingsley stuff, the Effectro, making these absolutely incredible valve preamps in mm-hmm. pedals.
Hmm.
And so we've done shows before, we just plug them into the effects return of Hot Rod Deluxes.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know anything about that. I haven't been working on anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to, you know, I was going to ask you that. I mean, you know, that we must have a Friedman app been lost in the mail, Dave.
we actually have to do that, but
we honestly,
now it's such a pain in the ass to ship into the country.
First of all, I think next time we're in the US, or if you're in the UK, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be so much fun. But I think next time we're in the US, Mick and I will have to come out and hang out.
Oh yeah, sure. That'd be great. Once we can all do that.
Yeah, man, totally.
Yeah, hopefully soon.
Hopefully we don't die before then.
Want to get Mike Bilson. Yeah, hopefully not. Mike Bilson, Dan, please, can you use your products more on that pedal show, like the Wetterbox, Loopy, ABY, Humdinger, QM, in different ways to help us how we can use them?
Cheers, Mike. That's very kind. I think I'm very aware with TPS. TPS isn't, I don't want it to be a platform. This sounds so crazy.
It's similar to what our show.
Well, I don't do Friedman as a platform here at all.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want TPS to be the platform for GigRig. Obviously.
Which is why I wanted to have you on for GigRig.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So, you know, GigRig has a channel and we'll do stuff on that. And bless Mick has been so supportive of us. And, you know, if an opportunity, you know, when we're talking about parallel mixing and stuff, we use the Wetterbox and, you know, that sort of thing. But it's really important that, you know, there's a lot of great companies out there doing a lot of really good things. And I want to make sure that we use as broad a range of stuff as possible. But thank you. Maybe I've gone too far the other way. You know, I might try and even things up a little bit more, but thank you. That's very kind.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure people can understand, you know, the conflict, you know, you want to have an independent show, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, I think obviously the success of TPS has been a massive factor in the success of GigRig. And it sort of allowed us to do some really great things. So, you know, sure. But we do try and keep everything. I mean, you know, like, for example, we don't do any paid product stuff. You know, you can't pay to have an item appear on the show. Mick and I, you know, most of the gear that appears on the show is stuff that we own. If someone sends us something and we really like it, you know, we'll buy it. I think, you know, we just didn't want to be a paid demo thing, right? Because there are people out there who do that so much better than we ever could, you know. So we just want to talk about stuff that we love.
Yeah,
you know, that's it. Like when we started, the way the whole show started, Mick's been a really close friend of mine for a long time, and when he was the first guy to ever review one of our products, he was working at a magazine called Guitar Buyer at the time, which was my favorite magazine when I first moved to the UK. I really loved it. And so I took out Dan, our first product, and that was him and Tim that I first met down there. Anyway, so we've been friends ever since. And he saw all my vintage gear and he asked me to write a column for the magazine, which I ended up doing for years. And then Mick went on to Guitarist Magazine and became editor of all the future publishing guitar media. So anyway, I'd always call Mick if I needed an opinion on something. And, you know, we were at a stage in business where, you know, things are picking up, but I needed some more insight into the, you know, the world of, the music industry, business and stuff like that. And he knows everyone. So I said, Mick, come on as a consultant, you know, and we can, he said, yep, great, no problem. So I'd call him and we'd say, let's talk about stuff. He'd say, yep, we'll get into this meeting, but have you seen this new pedal that come out? Oh yeah, it's amazing. And we'd end up talking for hours about gear. So look, time's run out. Let's catch up next week and we'll have this meeting. And I'd go down to Bath and see him. We'd sit down. We'd have the whiteboard out. We'd have all the pens. And yeah, okay, right, we're going to do this. Before you do this, though, have you seen this? And we'd plug it in. We'd just play for hours. And anyway, I was going to NAMM, and Mick had just left his job at Guitarist Magazine. And he gave me a call. He said, I'm thinking about coming out, but I don't have anywhere to stay. So, you know, come and stay with me. There's a spare bed. Come and crash. It'd be brilliant fun. And we'll finally have that meeting. You know, we'll finally have that the consultant meeting. Mm. And so he came out, and then we had an hour aside for the meeting. Of course not. It was NAMM. All the stuff had come out. It was amazing. We were walking to NAMM, and Mick said to me, "Let's just do this. We're incapable of talking about anything else." I mean, so when Mick calls me up now, and we'll still be on the phone for an hour talking about gear. Mm. It's just, you know, it's just what we do.
Right.
So, and that's how the show started. It didn't have any ambition with it. It was like, let's just talk about stuff that we love. And then this is where we are.
It's amazing. It's great. How long has it been?
5 years, five and a bit years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Grown fast, very fast.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, I think we've got 269,000 subscribers or whatever. I think there are lots of YouTube channels that have grown faster. Mm-hmm. I think what the TPS thing, I mean, I think, so the average view time of a TPS video is 17 minutes. That is the average watch time. The average video is like an hour or whatever.
Right.
But the average view time is like 17 minutes. The people who are into it, who we love dearly, are like really passionate about it, because it's a lot to have in common with someone. You know, if this gear, if you feeling connected to it, and you're able to express something musically by being connected to this stuff, and we're in any way able to inspire people to do that, it's a lot to have in common with someone, you know?
Yeah, it's a great community of people.
It's wonderful. So grateful for all of them.
I've got a question for both you and Dave. Do you have any experience, and from Modern Vintage again, thank you for the super chat. Do you have any experience with Dover amps? The DA50 seems to me the most popular, wondering about the quality of parts and thoughts. I have not.
No, I'm going to tap out on this one, Dave.
I don't know either. I know of it, but I have no idea what it looks like inside.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Peter Lasis, thanks for the super chat. I recently installed an RCA 12 AX7 long plate in V1 of my SLO and was blown away at how much of an improvement it made. Fatter, good compression. Can you explain what changes electrically?
It's a different tube. I mean, it's just a different sounding tube. I mean, every tube, I mean, even if you take, four of the same brand of tube, they all sound different. I had an SLO here that had all the original GE preamp tubes in it that Mike had put in years ago. That was super cool. Here's the thing. Ultimately, here's what you find. You think it changes everything so radically by putting that tube in. Now, if you were to take two of these amps and one with your tube in and one and another one with whatever tubes in it, and you were to put them on an amp switcher and switch in real time and then adjust the knobs to so the amps match.
Yeah.
Meaning start with them the same, but then the one that doesn't have your favorite RCA in it, can you turn the knobs to make it sound exactly the same? And I bet often you will find you can.
Sure.
So then you can't tell. But yeah, the only way to do any A-B experiments like that is in real time with an amp switcher kind of thing. You know, it's funny. Yes, they make a difference, but often you can turn the knobs to get that same sound.
Sure.
So in the end, it might not matter. It's a weird thing that I found over time. It's like, so when I do something now, it's like when I want to try out a new, when I have to say in production, change the kind of tubes we're using.
Yeah.
I'll retube one amp with the new choices and do a little experiment and use an amp switcher. You often can dial them in the same, or you'll find your favorite. You just got to listen in a kind of controlled way.
Actually, I know there's more questions. I've just got a quick question for Dave, because I've been doing this thing with Effects Loop recently, and my favorite effects loops and amplifiers, Dave, are the ones that you've designed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question to you is, when you design an effects loop, if you take, I don't know, something, it's a preamp that's got a reasonably high output impedance, mm-hmm. right? Are you matching the sound of that with that high output impedance before you buffer it? Or are you just, like, are you matching that impedance on the input so that the sound is relatively the same? If you, you know, let's say you've got a, you know.
Yeah, so amp. Yes. Correct. So, you want to have kind of going into the buffer section needs to be a relatively high impedance, or it loads down the, it depends on where you're placing this loop, or it loads down the EQ or the circuit before it, which changes the tone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also my loops are truly pedal level. So we drop that signal quite a bit.
And then you make it up on the turn.
And then we make it up on the tail end, and it's pretty transparent.
Yeah, no, I think of all the effects loops I've tried to do stuff with, your design is consistently great sounding. I've just been trying to work with this. I mean, I've got a matchless DC-30, which I love, but far out, man. The voltage on the send is just like... nothing works with it.
The DC-30. No, that's a passive loop.
Yeah. Totally. But there's lots of passive loops that I've worked that doesn't have that crazy output voltage like the DC-30 does. And it's certainly part of that sound with this amplifier, especially if you're using like the EF-86 channel and that's dimed and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that consistently with from the effects loops that I found that you designed have been my favorite loops to work with and, you know, build rigs for, because it's just they work so well. I think getting that stuff right is a lot trickier than people realize, to make them sound right.
Yeah. And also people often ask me sometimes to do certain things. Can you put a loop in, you know, this? How do I say this? So vintage style amplifiers shouldn't have a loop ever.
Yeah, right.
Meaning like something that derives its distortion, shall you say, from cranking it up.
Yep.
Even if it's a small deluxe or something, there's no point in putting a loop in an amp like that, because you're distorting the power section. So, and in turn, you're distorting your effects anyway. So you might as well just put them in front of the amp. So anything even with a post phase inverter master also doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're distorting the phase inverter, and then the effects sound distorted and they don't sound right anyway. So like a lot of my amps don't do that. It's like a clean power section where the most of the stuff's coming from the preamp. So in turn, it's like a preamp power amp situation.
But you're
so
it works with that into the preamp.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Then you can work with that effects loop. Yeah. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And, so yeah, and if you get any, and if you get in a situation where you want to use your vintage amp or something, you get a Fryette power station.
They're unreal.
And they're load so it down, and then use the loop in that, and boom, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, they're really great. I was going to ask you as well. Do you make anything with an EF86 channel?
No, and I will never.
Right, because they're so
problematic.
Comfy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In EF86 anymore, it's just like it was a problematic tube originally.
Yeah, of course.
It's just, you know, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's microphonic like crazy, and you know,
I've got like an old AC30. I've got a really old. I've got a 1961 AC10 twin with the original EF86 side, and I know that like the new AC30s, for example. Just use one side of a 12AX7 on the normal mm-hmm. channel, mm-hmm. you know. So it's, you know, no tone stack or anything like that.
Yeah.
Similar to the original EF86 side,
mm-hmm.
but there is, for me, there's still something about that valve that I haven't really been able to replicate.
Yeah.
Because you know the crazy gain, and but you're right, they're so temperamental.
Yeah.
I had a London from 65 amps
mm-hmm.
that had one side was the 20 watt Marshall.
Yeah.
You know, and the other side was the AC15 mm-hmm. with an EF86 channel. And I remember talking to Dan Bull about that and about just the trouble trying to get good production of EF86 valves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nightmare. Sorry. Yeah. I'm really disappointed. It's, you know, I rarely get to talk to you, so
no, it's fine. These
questions. It's I just fine. Wanted to get them
out. Oh, that's cool. Miguel Moreno, question for Dave. Would the Pink Taco be a good studio tool? I would say yes. Also, are you doing Wolfgang's rig now? I was curious about that as well.
I don't know. I mean, there hasn't been any. I don't think there's been anything. I mean, from what I saw when they played live, it was just a couple pedals, tiny, you know, into the amp. So,
right.
Will I mean, there's probably a good chance. Yeah. If there needs to be something done.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I think the Pink Taco is a good studio tool.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's see. We got a couple more. I don't want to miss them. Anthony Chabala. Thanks for the super chat. Dan, please tell us how it came to be that you did Jim Archer's pedal board. He is the most underrated guitarist out there.
Okay, so Gem plays for Noel Gallagher, who I did a rig for. Basically, Noel's producer is a very dear friend of mine, a guy called Paul Stacey, who I'm actually going to be playing in a band with next year, which I'm so excited about. Well, as soon as we can, you know, gather with humans.
Right.
And Noel asked me to put together a rig for him in the studio, which I did, and he loved and... you know, did the whole album with this board. And so I became friendly with Noel, and Noel asked me to get in contact with Gem, who's coming on the road with him to do a rig for him, which I did. I went down and hung out with Gem in his studio, and Gem had this, you know, was really clear about what he wanted, so I put the rig together for him, and he toured that with, still touring that with, well, toured that up to pandemic. And but yeah, Gem is wonderful. Just so tasty. Yeah, like playing with, obviously, guitar player from Oasis, and you know, now touring with Noel.
Super cool. Plexico, hi all. How does headroom impact pedal tone, i.e. Chase Bliss Automatone 1978 CX, other pedals you're aware of with high headroom? And I love you. Thank you. That's funny.
Yes, so headroom is really interesting. When you're with a reverb pedal, when you've got gain going into it and you're dealing with transients, headroom is super important. But headroom is really important, but it's one important factor of like 20 important things. You know, so it's, you know, great to have a high headroom, but not at the expense of noise floor and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, headroom is really important. It's one of a bunch of really important things.
Okay. I want to address this question, Joe Soap. Why would Wolf work with Dave? And then you said, we've consistently shit on EVH amps. See that? No, we don't. I even own.
Wait, what?
Yeah, no. I own an EVH amp, and I've got the Stealth, and I think it's fantastic. And to answer your question, why would Wolf want to work with Dave? Well, because his father worked with Dave.
I worked with him. I did his bass rig for all his touring with Van Halen.
Yeah,
and I don't shit on EVH products either. I mean, I like Ed's older sound better.
Look at this guy. Mark even hid his EVH amp after that episode. I sold the amp, you jerk off. I'm sorry. I'm not going to take bullshit from people anymore. I didn't hide my amp ever.
I own an EVH amp.
I also have a Freedman BE-100 that you don't see, but it's behind my chair. That too. God, people, just get a life. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Move on. Piss me off. I love EVH stuff. I've got about 6 of their guitars. So don't tell me we shit on EVH stuff. I'm a huge fan. I've got a sign right here. You see that? You see the hat that I'm wearing, jerk off? All right. Sorry. Just pissed me off there. Dan, we're going to get back to you. Peter Laces. Just wanted to say thanks for doing the show. So great watching you guys geek out. Warms my heart and fills my soul. Thank you so much. That's the kind of comment I like to see. So great. Let's see. I know there were other questions. Mike Jones, I've changed a single tube in an RP7 valve. It's the only tube and can definitely hear a difference in the distortion. Way better sound, but the clean seemed to lose its sparkle. I've never used an RP7.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't even remember what it is.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
So,
awesome. Well, Dan, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, it's been really great. It's been great to see you guys again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Do you have any other questions for Dave?
I've got so many questions for Dave. It's going to take an episode.
We can always do a private meeting.
As always, we're really keen to get your stuff on the show, but we'd love to do it with you. As soon as we can travel, we'll be over there. But, you know, it's an open invitation. If you're ever around, we would love to have you on the show. There's so much to talk about.
I would love to do it someday, again, when we can
totally
be freed up a little more to travel again. I was doing a ton of traveling before, and I imagine I will again one of these days, even if it's a couple years from now.
Yeah, awesome.
I think
I've built, loads of rigs, around your gear and stuff, and it's always fantastic and the happiest guitar player. So it's really great, mate.
Well, that's something to bring up real quick. The thing is I was a rig builder for years before I made products, and and the thing is, generally I make products to work properly.
Right.
There's so many engineers and things that can make wonderful things, but they might have no real world experience whatsoever with what works and doesn't work. And
what you can do and not do. Yeah. We talk about all the time. Nothing works in isolation.
Yeah.
If you've got something hinky in a pedal, it might not cause an issue in your pedal, but it might cause an issue in a pedal 4 pedals down the chain. I think it's kind of, it's obvious in your gear, and when doing stuff with Phil X is a really close friend, and And you know, hearing his signature amp was like mind blowing. When I went saw him with Bon Jovi, and I was another one's Tom Quayle had a Dirty Shirley, and I was building a rip for him. Well, that's really great. So really looking forward to having you on the show. I do have 1,000 questions, but we'd be here for hours and hours, and my curry's just been delivered. So, but a real honor. Great to see you too, Mark. And, you know, thanks much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Wait, we had a couple super chats that just came in.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A couple super chats. So we'll get to these before we let you go eat. Good to see Wolf on the other night. He was on Jimmy Kimmel. Emotional moment for me. Love to Dan and Tone Talk. Thanks, man. Thanks.
Thank you, buddy. Loot
89. Really appreciate it. And then there was Mike Bilson again. Dave with Sammy on TPS. Dan, don't forget Sammy.
Sammy Bowler, Bowler. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, great. Sammy. Open door. Very welcome.
Sammy's got a new band, which is
cool.
Very cool. And then Music Therapy Laz. Dan, been thinking about getting a pedal switcher and looking at the Air Stuff as well as your mini gig rig. Adam gave me your thoughts, please. I watched from the beginning to end. Love you guys. Adam, give me your thoughts, please.
Looking at the Air Stuff? What's Air Stuff?
Yeah, I don't know what Air Stuff means. I think you mean looking at the Atom. As far as pedal switches are concerned, if your rig warrants a pedal switcher, they can be great. If they don't warrant it, then it's overkill. If you're using lots of combinations and you want to be able to change order and do parallel things and use two amplifiers and get spillover from delay and that sort of stuff, and you're using mini pedals, they're great. If you only ever have one pedal on at a time, if you've got three pedals or whatever, it might be overkill. The thing, a good switcher should do a couple of things. It should preserve the tone of the pedals. One thing that, I was talking about when I had my vintage pedals, because of the rubbish buffers and stuff, and you chain those things together and things would disappear, like just that feeling of being connected. So having those pedals in a good switcher should preserve the sound of those. Of course, if you use those in combination, then you're back to having all those, the preamps and all the mismatched impedances, and that's all is consistent. But if if I go to a sound, I've got 14 pedals on my board, but if I go to a sound that is just my electric mistress going into my RE201, then that is the only thing that's connected, and everything else is sort of hard bypassed. Mm-hmm. So in those sorts of rigs, it makes a lot of sense. But if you've got three Boss pedals, it's overkill. It all depends on the rig, whether it's appropriate for what you need.
No, that makes sense. I definitely want to get the G3.
I'll love to get one out to you guys. Mm-hmm. With
once it's ready. Whenever, no rush.
Would love to get one out to you guys.
You mentioned before.
Yeah, would love to check one out.
Oh, I'd love to. Yep. I got this pedal from a guy out in Australia. Check this out. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
It's really cool, but the problem is I can't use it when it's in other pedals because I think like a real CE1.
It's got a 50K input pop.
Yeah.
So the original CE1 was designed for use with keyboards, and keyboards have got a much lower output impedance, and they can drive that 50K pot that's directly on the input. An old mod for the CE1 is just to take that 50K pot out, put a 500K pot in, and it, they're, you know, all of a sudden you get all this top end back. It's really great. Those pedals are really good after a buffer, you know, but if you're having it early on, changing that pot at the front is a great idea. But the really cool thing about that then is that if you then put it in the high mode and crank that up, it's the most amazing sounding overdrive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the preamp in it, once you give it love, because it's in there all the time as well, you know, on the original. And man alive, it's fantastic. We had, Mick and I did a thing at the Boss, is it the 40th or 50th anniversary? I forget which one, a few years ago. And I had the CE one there, and, you know, my old one. And I said, well, this is, because I heard Jim Magini from Midnight Oil use his CE one in this way, and it's like just unreal.
Wow, that's cool. I don't know if Davey walked away. I don't know if you saw that. I picked this up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's from Australia.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dan, thanks so much for coming on. Everybody, make sure you check out the Gig Rig. Check out their products. It's thegigrig.com. And I'll have that link also in our description for this video below, as well as the link for that pedal show. And you guys check out that pedal show as well. Always great with you and Dan, Dan and Mick. You guys are great. So.
Oh, cheers, guys. Thanks so much. Great to see you again. I can't wait till we can all, you know, get together and, you know, share that Australian fighting wine.
Definitely. Sounds good. We'll do that.
Brilliant. Cheers, guys. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Yeah, well, hang on a second, Dan. But we'll say goodbye to you as we say goodbye to everybody else.
Okay.
The next show is February 19th. That's with Michael Nielsen and Michael Torin, and that is the Rack Gear Extraordinaire show.
Nice.
So we'll talk about that February 19th, I believe, at 9 p.m. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you soon. Hang on, Dan. We'll say goodbye offline.
You're right.